The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. We make landscaping simple with our free, easy-to-use design program and step-by-step project guides. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block at the best prices. Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your outdoor project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Abel's in our Rumble chat says, it's a crazy world, friends. Stay safe. Wake up, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Yeah, on this show, we try to navigate this crazy world together and try to seek the truth wherever it may unfold. And we've got a busy show for you on this Wednesday because President Putin speaking with President Trump just a short time ago, basically saying, I can't deal with a terrorist country. This is a terrorist country of Ukraine. We can't negotiate with them. Essentially, why would I give them time to rebuild their arsenal in order to launch another terror attack on my country? And he told President Trump, I am going to attack them. And President Trump was like, yeah, that's something that you need to do. So we're going to look at all of that.
I can see where you're coming from. We probably would do the same. We're also going to talk about the fallout from the spending bill. It really seems that Elon Musk is taking this very personally. He did not appreciate the exercises of cutting government spending only for Republicans to tack it all back. At least he sees what the rest of us sees, right? There's this MAGA fallout where people are like, you're doing the opposite of what we wanted you to do. So more proof that they are a uniparty. We knew this, right? We shouldn't act surprised, but we can be heartbroken. I feel very emotional about it. Do you?
I do. It's really upsetting. We've had, of course, Congressman Thomas Massey on the show. Senator Ron Johnson is going to be joining us to talk about it in just in short order as well, because they're all upset about this. It's a big sort of like, I don't know, duping of everybody. So we'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about Corinne Jean-Pierre is writing a tell-all book, just like Jake Tapper trying to cash in on Biden's demise. Now she's admitting that she's left the Democratic Party. What? You couldn't have told us this a few months ago, maybe back during when everyone was asking you questions about Biden's mental capacity and you were lying to the American people. Now you're writing a book and expecting us to buy it?
Yes, she is, as well as Matthew Miller from the State Department. Like, yeah, we see this, you know, war crime thing. I couldn't say it when I worked for the State Department. Now I can. I figured it out since I left the government. All of a sudden, I can see clearly. So we're going to talk about that, all of that. Before we do that, though, we want to remind you that Redacted is brought to you by Chapter, because if you or someone you love is getting close to getting on Medicare or is on Medicare, well, then you need to look into Chapter, because the Department of Justice recently filed a massive fraud complaint against three of the largest Medicare brokers in the country because they were misleading seniors, claiming to offer unbiased help on choosing a Medicare plan, but instead steering them to insurance plans that would pay them kickbacks. And that is obviously not surprising because Medicare enrollment is so confusing. Big insurance is taking advantage of yet another poorly run government system. Medicare is no credit to the United States, nothing to brag about. You need help to navigate it, but you paid into it. You should be able to use it. That's why we recommend Chapter. They have their own family. After their own family was misled by these brokers, they decided to fix the system. They are fully independent, the only national advisors that search every Medicare plan to find the one that fits your needs. They advocate for you, not the insurance company. No steering, no pressure, just honest help at no cost to you. So give them a call at the phone number you see on your screen, maybe a little small. It's 202-655-5811, or head on over to askchapter.org/redacted. One more time, that's askchapter.org/redacted. They've saved the average senior only over $1,000 a year, and they are a free resource for our audience. So one more time, it's askchapter.org/redacted.
And thanks to Viva for rating our show here on Rumble. And yeah, we like to do that. So every hour, sort of raid the next show as it's coming up here. So thanks to Viva Fry for doing that as well. So good to see all of you guys for subscribing today on YouTube, Twitch, on Rumble and X. Good to see everybody. All right. Well, President Putin is making a lot of news today. First, admitting that Ukraine is really no longer a country, but essentially a terrorist organization. And of course, they have a president who's no longer elected. So he's an authoritarian, not elected by the people, and just staying in power. He asked the question, how exactly can you negotiate with terrorists? And why should we give them a break in the action of battle right now so that they can just rearm themselves, get like Western weapons from NATO, and then carry out other terrorist attacks on our infrastructure across our country? Why would we do that? He asked that question. Watch.
На высшем уровне. Но как же проводить в этих условиях подобные встречи? О чем говорить? Кто вообще ведет переговоры с теми, кто делает ставку на террор, с террористами? И за что их поощрять, предоставляя передышку в боевых действиях, которая будет использована для накачки режима западным оружием, для продолжения насильственной мобилизации и подготовки других террористических актов, подобных тем, которые были осуществлены в Брянской и Курской областях?
Of course, he's talking about the Bryansk bridge attack, which was confirmed today by the Russian intelligence. And then here, of course, you see the Crimean bridge attack as well, which was carried out by the SBU, all with NATO's help. So President Putin just spoke with President Trump on the phone. That conversation went very interestingly. Let's bring in Colonel Rob Manis, the host of the Rob Manis Show, to talk about that, plus NATO and so much more today. And where do things stand right now? It seems like things are spiraling out of control. We had Tara Reid on the show yesterday from Moscow. And she was saying, well, you know, she was living in Moscow. She's saying, I was feeling hopeful in the spring that we were about to maybe achieve some sort of a peace agreement. Putin just telling President Trump, I'm going to attack Ukraine. I'm going to retaliate. And President Trump was like, yeah, I think you need
Can't blame you.
I think you need to do that. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I've done several hits on this, Clayton and Natalie, and I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. Look, it's extremely important that the pro-war people on the Western side of this, the Ukraine side of this, understand that the Ukrainians just attacked a leg of the triad, the nuclear triad of the world's largest nuclear force country. And the United States is the second largest. And you should expect that the leadership of that country is going to respond in a way that will make it clear that you don't mess with our nuclear forces. And yes, I understand that the Ukrainians have a right to attack those bombers because they're used to fire conventional missiles into targets in the war that they're in with Russia. But this is the difference and why I've been talking about this since before Putin even went in 2022 and the concerns about that. And I've been attacked for being a coward, for being a nervous ninny. Putin, you know, the other side says Putin's just saber rattling. He doesn't really do anything. But look, guys, he published a new nuclear doctrine last year that had a piece in it that said essentially that if a non-nuclear power, weapons power attacks us and they're supported by nuclear powers and they attack part of our nuclear forces infrastructure or our nuclear forces themselves, that puts us into the realm of using nuclear weapons in this new doctrine. So look, I mean, I'm simplifying it, but that's essentially what this attack has done. And make no bones about it, the Ukraine's bumper sticker is on this, but this is a NATO United States attack. And what really surprised me and continues to surprise me is that the president's team says he was not notified of this. That tells me when Lindsey Graham and Dick Blumenthal, Danang Dick, are in Ukraine, and then Pompeo goes over to Odessa and brackets the attack afterwards, that tells me that the administrative state, the national security state, deep state, whatever you want to call it, I call it the national security state, has basically gone around the president of the United States, if that in fact is true. Now he may have been notified, and for all the right reasons is staying mum about that, because that would inflame the situation even more and open up the continental United States to targeting from nuclear weapons potentially. But I doubt that he would be able to contain himself if he had been notified of this, because he'd be talking about it. I'm just very, very concerned. I don't think he'll respond with nuclear weapons, but I think the response is going to be so big that it will, because it has to send that message. You don't mess with our nuclear stuff.
But it's us that will replace whatever is blown up. So you see the text here from President Trump saying it was a good conversation, but not a conversation that will lead to immediate peace. President right. Putin said very strongly he will respond to the recent attack on the airfields. So that's President Trump saying, you got to do what you got to do, and then right. we will go and replace that. Can we maybe not commit to not doing that? Like, you have to suffer the consequences, Ukraine. You poked the bear. We can't do this, but there's no talk of that. And that makes me absolutely batshit crazy.
Oh, it makes me crazy too. Look, the United States' interest is not along the border between Ukraine and Russia. Even Barack Obama said that that's not in our interest to be involved in combat operations or any type of operations there while they're at war with each other. We should be talking about how we're not going to further inflame this, and we're not. That tells me, and that heightens my concern, that has the president lost control of the national security state, and therefore the NATO national security state, which expands it even more, that everybody should be really concerned and pushing on your elected officials very aggressively. That this has got to be put to an end, because quite frankly, the worst case situation isn't him responding strongly on Ukraine. The worst case situation is that they follow their nuclear doctrine, but don't use nuclear warheads, and they attack a NATO or a United States target because they know we're behind it. That's the worst case.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go, well, that point you just made, and then I want to go back to something you said earlier about NATO. This idea that President Trump didn't know any of this, and maybe that's true, but yesterday we had reports on our show talking about that Pete Hegseth was watching this happening in real time, that these drone attacks on Russia happening in real time. And that might have been the case, too. He didn't know about it, and he was called into the Situation Room. They were watching it live in real time. Who knows? But this morning, Jack Posobiec on the War Room with Steve Bannon did say that he has sources that said the intelligence community absolutely knew that this was coming, and they were basically a part of it. I mean, how can Ukraine hit all of these targets? I have a friend living in Siberia, just reached out to me today. He says one of these bombs went off right near him in Siberia. Like, they hit in deep, deep targets inside of Russia. This had to have been a NATO-coordinated strike. And I just find it stunning to think that no one in the Trump administration was aware of this. And if not, that is maybe the most deeply troubling part of this entire story.
It is very deeply troubling. I mean, I get back to what I just said. One of the targets, at least one, may be us because of this. That would follow their doctrine. And my goodness. Now, Hegseth if he was in the Pentagon, in the National Military Command Center, we've got a team that monitors worldwide situations, and they could have called him. He's like 50 or 100 feet from the entrance to that, so they could have pulled him in, and he could have watched it in real time if we detected it and knew about it. But our intelligence had to know about it. There is no way that the Ukrainian SBU has the capability to look at all those targets, to get inside of the ground transportation system of the Russian Federation. Think about the strength of having or being able to do that and get 6,000 kilometers in and attack a nuclear bomber base. That would be like somebody being able to get a massive truck with hundreds of armed drones in it, all the way from one of our coasts or from the northern or southern border to Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri where the B-2s are, and destroying half of those airplanes. And the B-2s and B-52s, there's less than 100 of them total. That's our total nuclear force, bomber force structure right there right now. And we would respond very forcefully to that, to send that message that I just said. Look, I used to work in this business not too long ago, and that's exactly what we would do. So it's obvious that we had to know about it from a from the intelligence perspective, and that's what I'm talking about. It appears that the deep state, intelligence state, whatever you want to call it, the national security state is my phrase, has gone rogue. If they did not inform the president of the United States and his command team, which would be Hegseth and Tulsi Gabbard, that this operation was coming up and it had already been approved by the last administration, et cetera, that is a much bigger issue for us than it is anything else in this discussion. And I'm surprised I'm not seeing the president come out about it is my concern. I don't know what's happening from that perspective, because usually, you know, after a couple of days of something like this from a national security perspective, he will, if he's got an issue, he lets people know. And we're not hearing anything. Right. It's completely silent.
Great point.
Now, something that the president had hinted to in the campaign was possibly leaving NATO or making NATO states pay for themselves. We see now the war continues. American taxpayers continue to foot the bill. Now, the Pentagon says that Pete Hegseth is heading to Europe to encourage each member state of NATO to pay at least 5% their GDP and pay their fair share. But right now, Americans pay almost 65% of NATO. So Europeans have this sort of arrogance about they want the war to continue, but they are dependent on America keeping it going. And so how can Pete Hegseth get them to change anything? And why would they? It's kind of like if your college student lives in your basement and you say you need to pay the water bill, you're not going to do anything if they don't. Why would they start to, right? Because you're not going to go without water. You're not. There's no point. So he can say, please, but we're going to keep paying for that.
Yeah, we have to withdraw the funding. That's the force and the power behind the president's public position that he ran on. One of the reasons I supported him so aggressively and voted for him and encouraged others to and spent millions of dollars to help get him reelected was because of that issue. Because not necessarily to deconstruct NATO, although I have said before in the recent past that they've outlived their time. But to make the Europeans take the lead, not just in command, but primarily from a funding perspective, because it's not the right thing to do to make the American people fund, especially a war that most of us don't agree with. And I don't care what fake poll people show, most Americans, 65%, do not agree with further involvement and the aggressive nature of our involvement in this war with Russia because of this nuclear issue. A lot of people understand it. So we've got to get down to that. And the real deal is, will they pull the money? Initially, they said they were going to pull it, and then it got started again. And I got a bad feeling that the national security state has decided they're going to keep the president's team as much in the dark as absolutely humanly possible. They can't do it in everything. But in this, they're trying to keep it going for some reason. Congress is involved. I think that they need to be investigated, especially Graham and Blumenthal and everybody else that's tied to this effort over there through the funding, because enough is enough. I don't want my children and grandchildren to have to go fight and die for the border between Ukraine and Russia, especially when we're on the side that looks like it's the one that's infuriating the situation and continuing to keep it going, where tens of thousands of their people are dying and Russians are dying too, but tens of thousands of Ukrainians are dying. They're eliminating their population and they can't keep it up for much longer. The Europeans, they still buy LNG, liquefied natural gas, from the Russians. Millions of dollars. More. They spend more on energy from Russia today, Germany does, than they do supporting the war effort that they supposedly like. That just tells me that the whole picture of the threat of Russia is, as I've been telling people, it's overblown, it's propagandized because there's a war now, and it's continuing to feed what some people call the military-industrial complex here in the United States and now in our NATO-allied countries overseas, but they're still not willing to put up 5% of their GDP. And every country over there ought to be doing that regardless. And look, the main thing may be, the main power struggle may be to pull out or threaten to pull out of NATO or pull out of it altogether if they don't come around. Because we've got other threats that we really have to take a look at, especially the Chinese Communist Party. Look, this drone thing, the Chinese have around 19 military bases. They have farmland. They've had tens of thousands of Chinese military-age males come into this country during the Biden administration that are untracked and those kinds of things. There is a big issue out there from the Chinese Communist Party perspective directly targeted at the United States of America, and we're not handling it.
Colonel, yeah, everyone in our chat room agrees with you. Get out of NATO. Others calling it NATO a terrorist organization. We've obviously covered that here on the show, Operation Gladio, and it should have ended with the fall of the Soviet Union. Why does it still exist? So we could go on and on about this, and we'll be watching it closely. Colonel Rob Manis, always great to see you, host of the Rob Manis Show. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk with us today. We're going to be watching this. And
your words,
Putin's going to launch a massive, massive retaliation. Rob, great to see you, Colonel.
Thank you, Clayton. Thank you, Natalie.
All right.
I'm mad at snakes. But you know what? I've been thinking about this over the last few days as I think about the false promises of the GOP of peace, the false promises of, you know, balanced budget, fiscal responsibility. At least there's a contingency of us who said, this is not what you promised us. We're here and we see it. And without X, where would we do that? So that's my silver lining.
Yeah, I think,
this show.
Well, no, I think Glenn Greenwald and Tucker had a great conversation about this exact issue the other day on Tucker's show. And I thought it was a great discussion about at least like a lot of like MAGA people who, you know, supported Trump, supported his mission, are able to call out these people and say, hey, this spending bill is a disaster. Why are we still in NATO? Why are we sending weapons to Ukraine? Like if you ask like MAGA people, do you guys support sending money to Ukraine and weapons to Ukraine? Overwhelmingly, they would say absolutely not.
Right.
So why are we still doing it?
Yeah.
But of course, these Trump administration officials only go on Fox News and they only do interviews with people that aren't going to ask tough questions.
I mean, listen, when the politics only existed in the New York Times and it was weapons of mass destruction or not, and, you know, cable news, Fox News, CNN, like we didn't have the ability to dissect these promises. Now we do. So we got to stay here, you and me. We got to stay, and you and me, we got to stay here together. You can't go anywhere. Okay.
No, you can't, because we've got a lot of news to get to. We're going to talk about the Polish elections next. Are we going to see a change in Poland where they will distance themselves from the European Union? They just had a big election. New president will be, of course, officially taking office in August. But this is a big deal. Does this mean that countries are going to say, hey, we want to care about our own people once again and enough with the European Union? We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, hey, have you checked out the Redacted store? Because it is built on Shopify. And Shopify helps you take your idea from the ground up. Like you've got an idea that you want to launch. You want to kick it off. Hey, my daughter the other day, my 8-year-old daughter said, I want to create a slime business. And I said, you know what? Okay, I'll help you out with that. If you actually want to do that, put everything together. We'll even like launch a website and we'll do it on Shopify. Because Shopify can help you do that. Take an idea, learn how to be an entrepreneur, something you've been working on for a long time, and Shopify can help you get up and set up with a website where you can actually start accepting payments right there. Shopify has AI tools created for commerce. You know, what if people haven't heard about your brand? Shopify helps you find your customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. And what if you get stuck? You know, you're stuck in your idea. Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. So turn those dreams and turn those dreams into the best shot you have at success with our friends at Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial. Start selling today. Just go to shopify.com/redacted. That's shopify.com/redacted. And like I said, our whole store is built on the Shopify engine. So when we have an idea, we want to launch a new t-shirt. We have some new ones coming out just in time for Father's Day that we're working on. So those should be up very, very soon. So those will be all available at the Shopify, our redacted store.com, all built and easily executable right there on Shopify. So thanks to them for supporting the show.
Those of you who are like slime, you don't have kids. Slime is everything to teenage kids. Girls, especially, and young girls.
Yeah. I mean, they'll get like Elmer's glue, and then they get like a shaving cream. They make
and
a
these
whole
activators. And
they'll spend hours like building slime, different slimes.
Yeah. Don't ask me. I don't know. It's a lot of it is predicated on YouTube videos. Like, here, we're going to make this slime and look how satisfying that. I don't know, but they love it.
But everyone in our chat's like,
it's
what?
A mess.
Really? Okay. Exactly.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
All right. Well, over the weekend, Poland chose a new president, Karol Nawrocki, a conservative nationalist, arguably a political newcomer. He beat the liberal mayor of Warsaw, even though he ran as an independent. He was backed by the right-wing Law and Justice Party, and Donald Trump even threw his support behind him. During one of the debates, it was actually funny. He went over and grabbed the Polish flag and took the Polish flag and put it in front of him. And he took the, I think it was like a trans or a pride flag, and he walked over and put that on the other candidate's front of him. He's like, I'm going to take the Polish flag to support the Polish people. You can take this trans agenda LGBTQ flag. You can have it to yourself. He'll officially start in August, August 6th. So will Nawrocki's victory, will it challenge the prime minister, Donald Tusk's pro-EU government? You know, Donald Tusk, of course, is the prime minister, and he is very pro-EU. Are we about to see a big battle unfolding? Let's ask Mike Krupa. He is one of the smartest people in all of Poland, and he's joining us now to talk all about that. Dr. Mike Krupa, political analyst and a great commentator from Poland, Warsaw. Good to see you. I know it's late there, and I know you're just dealing with getting over sickness. So we're sorry. We won't try to make you talk too much here, Mike. Great to see you. So what do you make of this victory? Are we going to see Poland become Poland first, or will we more alignment with the European Union?
Well, it's great to see you guys again. In terms of Poland first, during the week before the second round of elections, actually, Po pierwsze Polska, which means Poland first in Polish, was actually one of the mottos of Karol Nawrocki's last week's campaign and the debate that took place at the beginning of the week, which was the last debate of the presidential campaign. So those Trumpian or MAGA vibes are very present, excuse me, in Nawrocki's presidential campaign. I think one of the most important things that we have to look at in terms of this election is, I would say two things, first of all. So the one thing that is glaring obvious to anyone who has been watching the Polish election is the fact that you mentioned that Nawrocki is not officially a party member of Law and Justice. He was supported by Law and Justice during the campaign. Obviously, he was considered a so-called citizens candidate officially, but everybody knew that Jarosław Kaczyński, the head of Law and Justice, and the party apparatus were basically behind him. But he did signal, if we are to believe the reporting by Newsweek Polish edition just over a day ago, that apparently some of the nominations that are being already proposed to him by Law and Justice are being outright rejected by Karol Nawrocki, which is a good sign. So he seems to be his own man, which is a good thing. And that leads me to my second point, is that if you consider that just around 21% of the vote in total that during the first round of elections went to the number three and number four guy, respectively, Sławomir Mentzen, who's basically a conservative libertarian, and number four, Grzegorz Braun, whom your audience and you know very well, who got 6% of the vote. In total, 21% of the vote was needed by Nawrocki desperately to beat the mayor of Warsaw in the second round, and he got the majority of those votes. So that's why it is imperative for him to open up the presidential palace, not to mainstream party members of Law and Justice, but at least put in key positions people that are associated with Grzegorz Braun and with Sławomir Mentzen in key positions in the presidential administration. That way he can show that the promises that he made to those voters just before the second round, he's taking them seriously. And he's going to be counting on them 5 years from now when the next presidential elections come up in Poland.
So what was the voter shift then? Because obviously there had to have been people who voted for Donald Tusk who now vote for this pro-Poland candidate. So was there a shift like we saw in the American election, people who just abandoned the Democratic Party because they couldn't take it anymore? What was their motivation? That had to have happened, right?
As I mentioned, the majority of the right, if you can call it that, went for Nawrocki during the second round. But there was an interesting segment, 10% of a candidate from the first round of elections. His name was Adrian Zandberg, who represents a party called Razem, which basically means together. And Razem sort of is, I would call them an old school kind of socialist type, Bernie Sanders type left, in the sense that they're not so much into the LGBT social issues, but more aligned into, you know, focusing on the working class, focusing on building homes for Polish families, and so on. Generally anti-war, for example, generally anti-interventionist. And it turns out that around 10% of those voters of Zandberg, who everybody expected would vote for the mayor of Warsaw during the second round, actually voted for Nawrocki last Sunday, which is very interesting because, you know, Zandberg many a times has claimed that, you know, Law and Justice, the party that supported Nawrocki, is a fascist party and so on. But at the end of the day, there was an alignment of a lot of issues when it comes to basically day-to-day bread and butter issues of Polish families that party takes into consideration, and that seemed to be a priority for Nawrocki and Law and Justice, at least on an official level. So that was a big surprise. What was interesting was when the first exit polls came out at 2100 on Sunday night, it was 50%, just over 50% Trzaskowski, 49% Nawrocki. But as the count continued during the night, it was about, I think the break came during, it was 3 a.m. in the morning in Poland, when it completely turned around and we started getting, you know, votes coming in from so-called the provinces, smaller towns, which overwhelmingly voted for Nawrocki. And you could say Trzaskowski was already celebrating his presidency. So it was the shortest presidency in Polish history because it lasted 3 hours, literally. So after 3 a.m., it was pretty obvious that Nawrocki won the election, and the liberal left, the globalists, the super EU, the servants of Ukraine, as they called them, they couldn't really, it was sort of like those pictures of those people crying after Trump was elected or when he was inaugurated in 2016, just calling out to the heavens, you know, going crazy, saying they're going to move out of Poland, the same repertoire that we saw in the States. So that was an interesting shift. Actually, before I went to bed, because I didn't stay up for the entire election night, but I knew that that shift was going to take place, because if you consider how many of the votes of Brown and Mensah would transfer to Nawrocki, it had to make him a winner. It only made mathematical sense at the end of the day.
So the Ukrainianization of Poland has been a big talking point to bring sovereignty and nationalism back to Poland, moving away from this craziness of the EU, this provoking of Russia. Now there's been a lot of questions, you know, will we see a normalization, some sort of an open dialogue between Poland and Vladimir Putin and Russia? People wonder, like, how important is Poland in this equation? It's incredibly important to what's happening right now with this war in Ukraine. Massive NATO infrastructure there, but the Polish people inundated with millions of Ukrainian refugees and are telling them in many ways, get out. We're sick of this. We want our country back. So this is all very important. Will we have dialogue now with Putin?
So actually, tomorrow, the American Conservative is going to be publishing my article on the potential of a realignment on the presidential level between Poland and Russia. So I'm not going to spoiler you guys. I encourage everyone to visit the American Conservative website tomorrow. It's going to be there. But I think I can say that you have to understand that the Polish political system is constructed as such that although the president is formally the head of state and the head of the armed forces, he doesn't conduct foreign policy per se. The foreign policy mandate is in the hands of the government, so the prime minister and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. However, our constitution is fairly vague in the sense that it says the president can coordinate foreign policy with the government. So I see a picture where there could be an impetus coming from the presidential palace of maybe not a new opening with Russia, but at least an easing of tensions, i.e., if Nawrocki is aligning himself, and he hasn't shied away from this, with such politicians in Europe as Robert Fico, Viktor Orban, Simeon in Romania, Donald Trump in the United States, whom he visited and actually had a photo up in the Oval Office just a few weeks before the first round of elections. Generally speaking, all these statesmen have a, if not pro-Russian, but a realist perspective on Russia. And if President-elect Navrotsky were to internalize such a realist approach to Russia, i.e., let's lower the temperature, let's say openly that, and he has said this openly, which I think is a positive development, because before the second round, he made a promise that he would veto Ukraine's access into NATO, he would veto Ukraine's access into the European Union, and most important of all, he said he will not send and he will not approve of sending Polish troops to Ukraine. And he's actually been fairly critical of Zelensky even before he was candidate, and also he has made it very clear that there will be no more tolerance for the promotion of the cult of Ukrainian nationalism, i.e. neo-Nazism of the Bandera type. He was, as you know, the head of the Institute of National Memory. He's a historian by training. He has a PhD in this regard. And he's very, very acute to the threat of Ukrainian nationalism and knows that there's a lot of compensation from the Ukrainians that has to come about for the historical wrongdoings and the genocide of the Poles during World War II by people who are hailed as heroes today by official Ukraine, that before that's done, we can't even talk about calling Ukraine, you know, a close ally, a close friend. So I'm hoping to see that the presidential administration that Navrotsky is going to build with outside experts coming in, not only law and justice people, not only party people, but outside independent experts can create an intellectual impetus for not so much changing the foreign policy, because that's not going to change with Donald Tusk in power, but at least providing a sort of baseline, an alternative vision of what realist foreign policy can look like. And let's not forget, the Polish president, despite the fact that he has to sort of coordinate foreign policy with the government, he can meet with whomever he wants and he can talk to with whoever he wants. So if he meets with Putin, for example, on the sidelines of the UN, well, that's not, well, we'll see if or at any other international gathering, for example, that could mean something, especially if you consider that our current still president, Andrzej Duda, during the last 10 years of his presidency, has not once met with Vladimir Putin, talked on the phone to Vladimir Putin. And let's remember, Russia is Poland's largest neighbor, and the largest nuclear armed power on Earth, which defies reality, defies any sense of logic why you would want to do that. I'm hoping that Navrotsky is going to bring the change that we need in at least lowering the level of tensions between Poland and Russia.
Always an education from Dr. Mike Krupa, always teaching us about what's going on there. We really appreciate it. And the article will be out in the American Conservative website tomorrow. So read Dr. Mike Krupa's great work as always. Thanks. I know you're sick under the weather. It's late night there in Warsaw.
But we have a storm outside our window.
Yeah. Then he was messaging me earlier. He's like, I might even lose power. So not only are you sick, you might even lose power. Thank you for staying up late with us there in Warsaw. Mike, great to see you as always.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. God bless.
Thank you. Thanks.
You too. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about how Elon Musk had his heart broken. He thought that he could encourage fiscal responsibility, but the Uniparty says, no, sir, we're going to continue to raise the budget. We're going to continue to raise the debt ceiling. We're going to continue to fund the military-industrial complex. Thanks for, you know, cutting some pennies off the budget, but we're going to keep on doing what we're going to do. He's taking this very personally. I am enjoying that because I, too, take the debt very personally.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that in just a second. But before we do, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because we're all feeling it. Costs are still rising. Inflation is not as high as it was, but still in the positive numbers. We see gas, groceries, home repairs. If you're a homeowner, you've probably thought, should I call American Financing to refinance and pay off that credit card debt? Well, then you second guess yourself because you have that low mortgage rate. But listen, that rate, it's not saving you if you're drowning in credit card debt at 25% or more. That's the math no one wants to face. So American Financing can help you learn to leverage your assets to trade bad debt for good debt. And this is something that wealthy people do all the time. They don't just hoard one asset. They leverage, they build in order to build wealth, not dig into debt. So let them teach you exactly how that works with a 10-minute phone call to American Financing. If you call them or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted, they can give you a personal finance consultation, look to see whether or not this works for you and teach you how it works, and then give you the study materials to decide for yourself if this makes sense for you and your family. So again, it's just one of many financial tools that you can learn and execute on and give yourself some breathing room. They save an average of $800 a month for their customers. Plus, they can get you out of maybe two mortgage payments if you time it right. That means it gives you some breathing room. So call them at 866-890-8434 or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Actually, got to use that redacted so that they know that we sent you. AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Well, President Trump is calling out Republicans who are standing in the way of his big, beautiful spending bill, pushing to get it passed by July 4th. But one person who is putting his foot down on this and is doing his level best to raise awareness about how bad this is Elon Musk, the head of Doge. He just posted this yesterday. "I'm sorry, but I just can't stand it anymore," he said. "This massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination. Shame on those who voted for it. You know you did wrong. You know it." And Peter Ducey, for his part, and I appreciate Peter, you know, like, asking tough questions, not just of like Corinne Jean-Pierre, but asking tough questions of Carolyn Leavitt. Like, hey, you know, President Trump's friend, Elon Musk, just posted this on social media, and Peter Ducey asked her about it. Watch.
"Something that just crossed, Caroline. How mad do you think President Trump is going to be when he finds out that Elon Musk said, 'I'm sorry, but I just can't stand it anymore. This massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination. Shame on those who voted for it. You know you did wrong. You know it.'"
Look, the president already knows where Elon Musk stood on this bill. It doesn't change the president's opinion. This is one big, beautiful bill, and he's sticking to it.
All right, that's the answer.
Now, well, Elon Musk is telling the American people, ask your congressman, ask your senator, why are you voting for this? Did you read it all the way through? Do you understand how much debt it adds to the national deficit? He posted this a couple of hours ago, Kill Bill from the movie, because, again, he was put in front of the American people to dictate all of the things that we were spending wastefully. Sesame Street in Iraq, trans plays in South America, all kinds of things that he went and cut. But that was to the tune of millions and billions. This bill is supposed to add trillions. And, you know, he's like, why did I spin my wheels doing this if Republicans are just going to do the same things that they did before?
Yeah, E.J. Antoni is a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Grover N. Herman Center for the Federal Budget, and knows this stuff very, very deeply, and joins us today from Philadelphia. E.J., great to see you. Welcome back to the show. We've been, of course, beating the drum on this. We've had Congressman Thomas Massey on the show, Senator Ron Johnson coming up shortly about this, calling out that this is, you know, you're kicking the can down the road here. The promise of future, like the promise that Congress is going to somehow be more efficient down the line? Like, when have they ever done that? What do you make of this pushback from certain Republicans in the Senate and Elon Musk on this bill?
Well, it's certainly understandable because this isn't really delivering on all of the things that we were promised. Now, all that being said, is it better than doing nothing? Probably, because if you do nothing here, you're going to see some pretty significant tax increases on the American middle class. Over the course of the budget window, which is a decade, so over the course of 10 years, it's going to amount to about $4.5 trillion in higher taxes on middle America. Clearly something we want to avoid. So, again, the bill is good in that sense, but there's a lot of work to be done, I think, for the Senate to improve this thing, and it really does need to be improved. Now, not all of the spending cuts that DOGE identified, potential spending cuts, can actually be implemented here. The rules of reconciliation differentiate between mandatory spending and discretionary spending. This is why the president has already started sending rescission packages to Congress. Those are things which, just like reconciliation, only require a simple majority vote. Let me put it this way. I understand where both sides are coming from. I understand why the White House and why Speaker Johnson are talking about this as the big, beautiful bill. And I also understand where Elon is coming from, where he's looking at the financial situation in our country and seeing it implode in real time. And he's very worried about that, as am I, quite frankly. You know, the national debt, although it's $36.2 trillion right now, that's where it was at the start of the year. It stayed there because the debt ceiling has been in effect. And so Treasury has been burning through its cash account. At the same time, it takes different kinds of extraordinary measures in order to pay its bills. Those extraordinary measures would be things like not putting money into trust funds like Social Security and planning on doing that sometime in the future when it can borrow again. The issue here is that as soon as that debt ceiling is lifted, the Treasury is going to have to go on a massive borrowing spree to not only undo all of those extraordinary measures, but also replenish all of the cash that they have been burning through these last several months. That means that we're going to be at $38 trillion in debt literally by September. The problem is getting away from us and very, very quickly.
Now, something that Thomas Massey said on Redacted last week is we don't need it in one big bill. If we have these priorities, we can tackle them one at a time and get Congress to sign off on them in piecemeal so that we're not adding crap to the bill. It's kind of like when you get a value meal at a fast food place because you think you're getting a deal, and then you realize, oh, no, that's the same if I bought it a la carte. So then I can buy it a la carte. It's the same. So are we being sold a bill of goods?
Well, I'm going to take my monetary hat off and put on my political scientist hat for a second here. I think the big problem that they're running into right now, the Republicans in Congress, is the fact that the Democrats will give them zero help on anything. And so the only way they can get stuff done right now is with reconciliation, is with rescissions. That means if they want to add things like military spending so that we can replenish our depleted military reserves, so that we can actually finish building the border wall, so that we can get the funding we need for more people and more drones on the southern border, that's going to require all that stuff being thrown into reconciliation. There's just no way you're going to be able to do it outside of that because you're never going to get through that filibuster in the Senate. And obviously, the last thing the Democrats want is border security or a strong military. So that means we are forced into trying to jam pack everything we need into this bill. It's not a great solution, but I'm just not sure what the alternative is, unfortunately.
Well, you mentioned a couple of key issues that the Senate will need to really tackle here. So it seems like this thing is on its path to passing, but you've got voices in the Senate that are trying to stop this. So I agree with you on the tax cut piece of this, but what sort of big cuts can we expect from the Senate? Where can they draw some red lines here and then send it back to the House of Representatives and have some sort of, common ground? We got rid of all of these things. We got rid of all of these massive increases here that, you know, are going to be pushed down the line here. Are there some big cuts you would call out right now?
Oh, certainly. So there's two right off the top of my head. One has to do with all of these different entitlement programs, these welfare programs. They can put in much, much tighter restrictions to get rid of the abuse, the corruption, the fraud, the waste in these different programs to reduce the number of illegitimate payments that are going out the door. And in cases like Social Security, that's wonderful for the program because the more you reduce those illegitimate payments, the longer you prolong you prolong the solvency of that trust fund, which means legitimate beneficiaries are going to get their payments for a longer period of time. Tightening up the restrictions on Medicaid will ensure that not just illegal aliens, but able-bodied men aren't getting these checks. That should be reserved for pregnant women. That should be reserved for the infirm, et cetera, the disabled. So there's that whole bucket. The other big thing they can do, and this is on the revenue side, although it technically is I guess, a spending item, is we got to get down the cap on salt. The amount that the House increased the salt deduction, the state and local tax deduction, was completely unacceptable. Look, this is a handout to the essentially the Democrat donor class. This is a handout to high-income individuals in high-tax municipalities like New York City, like Chicago, like Los Angeles. And it is not a pro-growth tax cut. When you do things like reduce marginal tax rates, or when you get rid of the tax on tip or the tax on overtime, that greatly increases essentially how much pro-growth stimulus you have in the economy, because what it's doing is it's decreasing the penalty on work. And so if you contrast that with the salt deduction, it's exactly the opposite. So increasing the salt deduction is not only costly, it does nothing for economic growth.
Now, the other day I was driving, I saw a dude on the side of the highway with a sign, cardboard sign that said, "Save Medicaid." The bill does not actually intend to get rid of Medicaid. It just introduces stricter requirements to receive it. So what would you say to my freeway dwelling friend with a cardboard sign whose main opposition to this? This is the Democratic talking point, right? It's not very productive because there are other things that are worth our attention. But why are they hyper-focused on that? And what would you say to this dude?
Well, I would probably say nothing to him, because clearly if you're that far out of your right mind to stand outside with a cardboard sign that is so disconnected from reality, far be it from me to try to convince you otherwise. But let me try to convince the viewers, at least, on your great show. Look, the fact of the matter is this bill would increase, not decrease, increase Medicaid is also going to go up, but Medicaid specifically is going up. It's just that it's going to go up at a slightly slower rate than it would before. And that has to do with the fact that, again, you're kicking illegal aliens off of the program, people who shouldn't be getting this money anyway. I mean, it's amazing how Democrats are throwing a fit right now that we're going to remove illegal aliens from a welfare program after Democrats have been telling us for years that illegal aliens aren't eligible for welfare programs anyway. And that's just a right-wing conspiracy or a conservative talking point or whatever other nomenclature they want to give to it. The fact of the matter is California has been flagrantly giving these illegal aliens all kinds of handouts. It's not just California, but they've been the biggest offender, despite the federal government saying, no, you're not allowed to do this. Under the Biden administration, they turned a blind eye. The Trump administration is trying to crack down on it. But the fact remains that currently you have millions of illegal aliens receiving all kinds of federal aid. They should be receiving zero, because they shouldn't even be here in the first place.
Okay, EJ and Tony, great answer. Always great to see you. Thank you so much for your perspective on this. We'll all be watching. Just final word here, 10 seconds. Do you think this thing is going to pass without any major cuts, going to fly through the Senate?
No, I think you are going to see some revisions to it. I'm not quite sure how major or minor, but there's definitely going to be some revisions. It's not going to be a clean carbon copy of the House bill.
Okay. All right.
EJ, great to see you. Thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Because we held them to accountable, maybe to account. Maybe because we don't like it, and they actually might listen.
Miss Stacy Lynn in our chat says,
"Silver lining."
Yeah, Miss Stacy Lynn in our chat says, "Yeah, accountability is actually refreshing for once."
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And someone else says, "Clayton, you let Natalie drive." I didn't say I was driving. I said I saw that on the side of the highway.
I was in the car. If it was both of us in the car, I'd be driving. You were driving by yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably gonna get something with your
hair. I was going to get gas at Costco. That's when I saw that dude. Yeah.
All right. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about Corinne Jean-Pierre writing a tell-all book. Yeah. Are you going to be buying that tell-all book about the Democratic Party? Why she's going independent?
If she says, "I lied and I shouldn't have, and here's why I did it," then
yes. If she's conciliatory?
Then yes. But not because, like, oh, this is what her, oh, I couldn't see it at the time. Yeah. Now I see it 4 months later.
Also, we're going to talk about Canada increasing massive military spending under Mark Carney. Oh, Canada, did you think we forgot about you? No, we're holding you account. We're going to be watching and looking very closely at what is happening in Canada. But first,
Is that to me? Oh, first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Genucel, because summer is right around the corner, and so are those visible dark marks, sun spots, and other blemishes that the sun can leave behind. Until now, the Dark Spot Corrector from our friends at Genucel can visibly fade away dark marks, sun spots, scars, and other signs of discoloration all over your skin. It's formulated with the patented Lumiskin, which is a revolutionary new ingredient, and Genucel's legendary base, shown to visibly reduce age spots, sunspots, and even tone for a brighter, more youthful look. You'll be amazed at how quickly you see results. So now you can enjoy the summer sun, the beach, and barbecue without those pesky spots. And as always, you'll see results or your money back. No questions asked. And right now, you can get your dark spot corrector with every Genucel complete skincare package for 70% off. Plus, you get an extra discount automatically applied at checkout for the world-class skincare that works. It's guaranteed or your money back. So order yours right now at genucel.com/redacted. You'll get the moisturizer, the moisturizing effect on your skin for the harsh summer months. So again, that's genucel.com/redacted. And you get a free spa box with two bonus gifts plus free shipping. One more time, that's genucel.com/redacted. Genucel.com/redacted.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Oh, Canada, did you think we forgot about you? No, we've been watching very closely at what you're about to do under Mark Carney, and the descent into chaos is all but inevitable at this point. Look at different numbers right now. Mark Carney wants to almost massively increase defense spending. Some numbers from the Financial Post have it at $64 billion, others at $46 billion. Others, when you tally it all up, would be over $100 billion that Canadians will have to foot the bill for massive increase in defense spending. Oh, and by the way, Mark Carney wants to join the EU's defense plan. So Canada wants to become part of basically the EU, descending into madness. You want to go to war with Russia as well? Mark Carney? It's madness. Canadians are struggling as it is, and now you want to spend hundreds of billions of dollars on increased military spending? Okay. Let's talk to David Craden, host of Craden's Right, writes at the Post-Millennial, and he's been watching this very, very closely. Oh, we gave you a little bit of a breather, David, to kind of ingest and let the fragrance of Canada's elections sort of wash over you over the past week. But you're back. We're glad to have you back. And now this massive military boondoggle, what do you make of this? Are Canadians excited about spending this amount of money?
Well, Canadians are not excited about Mark Carney spending any amount of money right now, because he's already run through $500 billion in unaccountable money, because he hasn't introduced a budget and refuses to do so until sometime next year. Canada hasn't had a budget since last spring, 2024. So he's spending money at a faster rate than Justin Trudeau without parliamentary authorization. He's essentially ruling by decree. And this is exactly what I warned people about 3 weeks ago. I said, you're going to get a Mark Carney who's going to run the country in the back room. He's going to run the country like the WEF. He's going to run the country like a globalist. And before I get to defense spending, he's got a bill before Parliament right now that is supposed to be cutting immigration and boosting security spending as of the border. However, if you read the fine print, Clayton and Natalie, if you get to the bottom of the bill, there's also a little clause in there about Canadians no longer being able to own more than $10,000 in cash. This is the first step towards a digital currency. How is he justifying it? Well, that's going to prevent organized crime from laundering money. So this is dangerous stuff.
That's how they spin it, David. I mean, hold on. When we lived in Portugal, of course, the European Commission, this was what they said. And Portugal, Spain, other countries have a limit on the amount of cash, of course, that you can use. I think down to like 500 euros in some countries. It depends on your country of choice. Spain, I think, is more restrictive because they say that if you're using cash, you're likely a terrorist. You're basically on the gray market, as they've listed. You're on the gray market, a.k.a. you're a terrorist.
So the cash under your mattress, not even used as a transaction, you cannot have, that's collectivism.
That's precisely what it is. And I remember both of you talking about the Portugal experience and thinking that can't happen in Canada. We have no history of this. But yes, we do. Mark Carney's making the history in front of us. In terms of defense spending, though, where do you think all of these billions of dollars are going to go? To Canadian defense? Or is it going to go to Europe and Ukraine? Mark Carney was prime minister elect not 2 days when he ran over to Rome and met with President Zelensky of Ukraine and promised him more billions of dollars. So where is this money going to go? And why does Canada want to join the European Union Defense Force? We're already a member, a founding member of NATO, and I maintain that organization is way past its due date. It's time to disband NATO because it's creating nothing but the potential for nuclear war everywhere it is. But do we really want to join another military club with people like Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron, who are talking about having a war with Russia when they can't even defend their own borders? Britain is a shell of what it used to be. It has more admirals than it has battleships. It, like Canada, it can't even fly its aircraft. Half of them are not operational. This is a huge farce. And as for France, well, we know what happened to France when it invaded Russia in 1812. And exactly the same thing would happen again, except the Russians would be pushing back in probably a couple of days. So this is all nonsense, but it's dangerous nonsense. And as you reported yesterday, Clayton, with idiots like Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina going to Ukraine and violating the Logan Act in the process, I have to say, he should have his, excuse my language, ass hauled before a judge and get charged for violating the Logan Act and absolutely desecrating American foreign policy in the process and trying to foment a nuclear war with Russia. He's a madman. But so are Keir Starmer, and so is Emmanuel Macron. And this is the club that Mark Carney wants to join, the club of madmen who are trying to drag the world into a nuclear war. And I can tell you, this has got nothing to do with Canadian security. It's got nothing to do with replenishing the Canadian Armed Forces, with the equipment that Trudeau gave away, including every last operational tank we had. It has everything to do with Mark Carney cozying up to the WEF and his European friends. And by the way, we know Mark Carney has articulated his desire to devalue the Canadian currency and the American dollar for the benefit of his European friends. This is another plan he has in the offing. So Mark Carney is full of surprises, but the idiots that decided he was a moderate guy, this was a banker after all, you've got to be able to trust a banker to manage the economy. This was a banker, a failed banker. When I interviewed Liz Truss a month and a half ago, she said Mark Carney was a disaster as the governor of the Bank of England. All he knew how to do was print money. And we've seen in the couple of weeks he's been here, that's exactly what he's doing already. More than half a trillion dollars spent, and he's just getting started. But of course, if you listen to Mark Carney, he's still all about border security, bolstering our national defense, cutting back on immigration, and spending less money than my predecessor did. He's actually spent more money already than his predecessor did in the last fiscal year. This is all gross hypocrisy. And, you know, I'd be laughing, except Canada is on the precipice of an economic catastrophe, probably another Great Depression, because the economy is in tatters. People cannot afford to live. The price of food has doubled in the last 16 months, and I can attest to that. People are starving in this country, and they can't afford to buy homes or rent apartments. That's the state of Canada right now, And Mark Carney is so delusional, or shall we say intentionally delusional about all of this, that it doesn't seem to bother him. He keeps talking about Canada being the next superpower, the next energy superpower with green energy and traditional energy. And of course, it's all talk. There's no substance to this. And he's trying to co-opt right now the official opposition, because I really believe what Mark Carney wants is a one-party government. He will rule by decree from the back room. He'll make an appearance once or twice a week, a question period, and he'll give a little bit of his bonhomie. I'm everybody's best friend. But in fact, he is destroying this country at a rate faster than even Justin Trudeau, in his wildest imagination, could only dream about.
Oh, geez. God. Now, something I notice is that liberals are really Europhiles because they don't study the European economy. They don't understand that they support European defense. They sort of have this idea that Europeans, and I felt like this too before we moved there, like, oh, they know so much about food. They don't have processed food. They don't have sugar in their food. They know a lot about skincare. They have this beautiful culture. They take so much time off. And then you go there and you realize it's a socialist hell after you live there, and there's a government for their government. Their people have no freedom. It's an economic perversion built on debt, and they're poor. And so when you see these people like, I'm moving to Europe, I laugh, like, go ahead, you know. And
yeah, they're like, I'm getting out of America.
Right, I'm going there. But that seems, that message maybe resonates with liberals in Canada, like, yes, let's be more like Europe, right? And I'm laughing because I had to learn this the hard way through my own misery. And so, is that what keeps Mark Carney's support? Like, yes, we need to live this culture that knows everything about butter. Like that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
We need to be more like
exactly,
Europe.
Natalie, you couldn't be more correct, because Mark Carney has said Canadians are really Europeans. We're not like those terrible Americans. Those Americans who have nothing but bad taste. And that's exactly how Mark Carney talks about Europe, as being this bastion of the elites, this bastion of good taste, this bastion of discretion. And this is where he thinks Canada should be going. The European Union, we're nowhere near Europe. Our natural trading partner, our natural ally since the Second World War, has been the United States. And Mark Carney, of course, plays footsie with Donald Trump on Monday. And on Tuesday, he talks about branching out to Europe because we can't trust those Americans anymore, especially that Donald Trump. It's all a game. The two of them are talking. The two of them are the best of friends. Donald Trump clearly likes Mark Carney. He wanted him to be prime minister. He thinks he can control him, I think. He thinks Mark Carney might destroy the country to a degree that it might become the 51st state. But the two of them are very friendly. Mark Carney's playing a game here. But what he really wants to do is turn Canada into the Europe you just described, Natalie, where people are hungry. People are starving. We have mass immigration that's changing the culture of the country beyond recognition. We have 1 million people enter Canada in the last year. This country has been changed beyond recognition, and I'm not sure the only way out is what Alberta is actually recommending, and that's independence for that province. And I invite you to bring on somebody from that independence movement to explain exactly why that possibility, why that potential is so popular right now in Alberta, because they're saying, what is left for us in this country? All we do is dish out the money to other provinces, $2 billion, $3 billion a year to other provinces, and we get punished because we have oil and gas in the ground that the government doesn't want to take out of the ground. So that might be the only way out in terms of saving something of what the old Canada used to be. But Mark Carney, you know, he brought King Charles III over here for the throne speech. A lot of people said, oh, isn't that lovely? Mark Carney really respects Canadian heritage. He really respects our traditions and our history. Balderdash, he brought this guy over here because Charles is another globalist. And while Charles was at the throne speech, he made the outrageously moronic suggestion that he was reading that throne speech from the unceded lands of the Algonquin First Nations, meaning They still own it. So somehow the British Empire or Canada doesn't own that land and didn't own that land. We're basically, and you have to remember, the king is Canada's head of state. He's at an official function proclaiming that Canada doesn't own the land that Parliament Hill sits on. Not only stupid, but incredibly outrageous. But that's why Mark Carney brought this guy over, because King Charles is the biggest globalist, the biggest supporter of the WEF, the biggest fan of Klaus Schwab that you'll ever find. And all of the royal family, of course, are in the pocket of these people, and very close links to people like Jeffrey Epstein. And I tell you, nobody has questioned Mark Carney about his wife's connection to Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell, and those questions still need to be asked.
Oh, we have a lot of questions about Epstein that we're not getting answers to in the United States. Add that to the laundry list. My God. David Creighton, great to see you. People asked in the chat said, is Redacted Canadian? No, we're not Canadian, but we cover stories from around the world. And Canada, of course, is a big one as we watch the militarization and the EU cozying up of what's happening there with that.
Can I just
government.
Add one thing, Clayton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I texted you on the weekend. I was at the Jimmy Dore comedy show here in Ottawa. It was a sold out event, which I think I helped him because I promoted the event because I really love this guy. But of course, he said hi to you and Natalie. He loves your show. But every second person came up to me and said, "Hey, we watch you on Redacted every week." I said, "Do you watch my own show?" "Yeah, we watch that too, but we love you on Redacted." So there you go.
Thank you.
You know,
all right. Well, watch
so
his show
people.
Too.
Yes.
It's called Creighton's Right, and he is.
Yeah, he's all over X. Follow him on X. Follow David Creighton on X. And we always love having David on here on Redacted. So we try to cover stories from around the world. But Canada, of course, is, turning into a liberal hellscape. And we're focused very deeply on it. David, great to see you, my friend. Always always a pleasure. Thanks, David.
So nice to be here. And just see you soon, Natalie and Clayton. We love you.
Thanks so much, David. Appreciate it. And thanks for the kind words from Jimmy Dore. Appreciate that. We love Jimmy as well. So thank you, Jimmy. And thanks to the team over there at the Jimmy Dore Show. Okay, we've got more news to get to because we're going to talk about here before we go.
Liars.
Liars. Corinne Jean-Pierre writing a tell-all book. Oh, my God. We'll get to that in a second, which is unbelievable. But speaking of books, could you use some extra money? Who couldn't, right? Well, you are going to love this because you probably have something in your home right now that can make you thousands of dollars. Yes. What is it? Books. We're talking physical used books. Now, I'm not talking about reading those books, and I'm not telling you to become an author of books. I'm actually talking about selling used books online for profit. That might not sound that exciting, but it sure is profitable, and it's very simple to do. People are successfully making a life-changing amounts of income with this because it doesn't take a lot of money, time, or technical skills, and it could be done in your own schedule, all online, from the comfort of your own home, anywhere in the world. And by the way, you don't even need to already have used books. You don't even have to touch or store books in your house either. If you're interested in learning more about this, there is a short training that shows you exactly how you can profit by selling used books online. And the best part is, the training starts today, and it's free. Just go to bookprofits.com/redacted to watch the training. Again, simply go to bookprofits.com/redacted. You can even scan that QR code right on the screen right now to get started today. It's free, and it could be life-changing. We have a bunch of books. We have a bunch of children's books. And even my little daughter, my 8-year-old daughter, who read these, read all these children's books back in the day, our daughter Eve, who's standing here right here next to us,
she just came in and said, "Can I watch?" And
can I
said,
watch the
no,
show?
No, you cannot. You can go read your books.
You can go read your books.
She said, "Should I read my books? And then can I watch my iPad?" And I said, "Yes to the first thing, no to the second."
Go read your books.
This is summer. Also, she said, "Can you? I'm not going to be able to do this on the show."
All right, let's talk about this.
Okay. Eve, all right. We have a segment to do about people who lie.
Do you want to watch this?
Politicians lie.
Do you want to watch how politicians lie?
I'm going to tell you all about it.
Why are Democrats trying to make some money now off of their failed presidency?
Off of their books, right. All right, here's the question, Eve. I'm going to ask you, why are Democrats suddenly turning on themselves and admitting they lied during the entire Biden presidency? So we saw Jake Tapper from CNN saying, I just didn't know Biden was so sick. I didn't know he was in decline. It was right before my eyes and I didn't know. Now, Karine Jean-Pierre, who is the White House spokesperson, Biden's official megaphone for years, announced she's an independent now. She has left the Democratic Party. And she's saying, oh, you know, like, I felt like I needed to do this. That's weird, right? Because I swore that her job was to repeat Democratic talking points with the loyalty of a golden retriever. So what changed? Did she go to a silent retreat in the last 4 months and have an attack of conscience? Here's her new book coming out in October. She wants to tell you that the two-party system is broken. She says she's a free thinker now. Now, the book description is all we have to go on, but what it tells us is that she's ready to throw the Democrats under the bus and tell tales out of school. The description says that she didn't come to her decision lightly to be an independent. She served two American presidents, Obama and Biden. And in 2020, when she joined as senior advisor, became Harris's chief of staff, and then 2 years later, White House press secretary, she says she's going to take us through the 3 weeks that led to Biden's abandoning his bid for a second term and the betrayal by the Democratic Party that led to his decision. So she is going to admit that the Democrats led a coup, that they betrayed the sitting American president from their own party. But yet she's going to say that we're free thinkers, which is interesting because she was asked point blank when Biden decided not to run, if he was stabbed in the back, and she denied it point blank. Now she's this reformer, this unifier. And so here was, in fact, in the weeks that Biden announced he would not run, if there was, in fact, a betrayal happening, she was a very good actress because she says, no, it just was his decision. Watch Peter Ducey ask her about this. She's not acting like she has just observed a betrayal. Watch.
It would seem that people in this White House knew that President Biden was slipping, and it was hidden from the American people. So who ordered White House officials to cover up a declining president?
I know that that is a narrative that you love and
He did a press conference at NATO. I'm in it. There's all these things that I need to finish. And then 10 days later, I'm dropping out.
Okay, you're asking me like multiple questions here. First of all, there's been no cover-up. I want to be very clear about that. I know that's the narrative that you all want.
I've been with President Biden for 5 years.
Are you going to let me answer the question?
Would you at least admit that the debate was not just a bad night?
Can I answer the question?
Yes.
All right. Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. To your first question, it is not a cover-up. I know that is the narrative that you all want. It is not. I'm going to say this again, and you're going to hear it directly from the press. I hope you listen tonight. I think it's going to be incredibly powerful and important. The Oval Office, presidents, as you know, when they make speeches from the Oval Office, it's because there are important moments that they want to directly make sure that the American people hear from them, and it's obviously going to be done in prime time. I would listen to the president. And then what I will say is that it is not easy making a decision that the president made on Sunday.
Okay, so she just said there was no cover-up, there was no betrayal, but the premise of her book is that there was a betrayal that happened in the Democratic Party. So why is she saying this now? What can we possibly learn from her unless she just says, I had to lie, that was the job, and I needed a job, and that's what I did. And I got to wear pretty clothes and I got a makeup artist because she did look beautiful every day. Here she is again. She's very good at her makeup. She looks beautiful. I'm going to give her that. But here she's saying in her new book, I'm not exactly sure what she's... Let's try and figure it out together. Watch.
This is truth. And here's how I will lay it out to you. I think we need to stop thinking in boxes and think outside of our boxes and not be so partisan. And the way that I see moving forward in this space that we're in right now is if you are willing to stand side by side with me, regardless of your political, how you identify politically, And as long as you respect the community that I belong to and vulnerable communities that I respect, I will be there with you. I will move forward with you. And that is, I think, so important. So this book, Independent, it's about looking outside of boxes, not just always being in a partisan stance. And how do we move forward together in a compassionate way, in a way that really truly cares about people? October 21st.
My God, I can't wait. You know what I want for Christmas now?
I'm going to get you that. Yeah. October 20th is our anniversary. I'll see if I can get you an advance copy for our wedding anniversary. No. Okay. I think what she's trying to say is we need to not be so divided. And that's easy for her to say now. But from the platform of the White House, she many times said that Republicans and President Trump were a threat to democracy and that they were the purveyors of misinformation, that they were not to be trusted, that any talking point she was not ordained to say was conspiracy, deep fake. So I don't know. I feel like 4 months is not really a transformation. It's a rebrand, right? So that she can continue to get work. Now, if she does not say outright, I had to lie, that was the job, then there's no reason to read that book. She lied about wars and people died, like this joker, ex-State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller, now all of a sudden realizing that Israel has been committing war crimes. Watch.
Do you think what's going on in Gaza now is a genocide?
I don't think it's a genocide, but I think I think it is without a doubt true that Israel has committed war crimes.
You wouldn't have said that at the podium.
Yeah, look, because when you're at the podium, you're not expressing your personal opinion. You're expressing the conclusions of the United States government. The United States government had not concluded that they've committed war crimes, still have not concluded that.
But your personal view is they have.
Well,
while you were there.
But let me qualify that. There are two ways to think about the commission of war crimes. One is if the state has pursued a policy to deliberately committing war crimes or is acting reckless in a way that aids and abets war crimes. And that,
all
I think, is an open question.
All of these people are scumbags.
I think what is hard, is almost certainly not an open question, is that there have been individual incidents that have been war crimes where members of the Israeli military have committed war crimes. So ultimately, in almost every major conflict, including conflicts prosecuted by democracies, you will see individual members of the military of militaries commit war crimes. And the way you judge a democracy is whether they hold those people accountable.
But Israel hasn't.
That's my point, right? Is we have not yet seen them hold sufficient numbers of the military accountable. And I think it's an open question whether they're going to.
I'm really struck that you think now that Israel did commit war crimes. And yet at the time, and I get why, but at the time you were at the podium and you couldn't say that. I mean, personally, that must be very difficult for you.
So the State Department itself had concluded, they didn't phrase it in these terms, but I think I did at the podium a few times, had concluded that it was likely that Israel had committed war crimes. But I do think it's almost certain that they have.
Like, we kind of got around to that conclusion eventually. We alluded to it. We didn't actually say it because the murders didn't bother me all that much. Even though the State Department had people resigning in protest of support of Israel, had whistleblowers sounding the alarm. Watch this. Let's roll back the tape from October 2024 when he was asked by a reporter from the Gray Zone, Liam Cosgrove, about the genocide. And he was like, stop grandstanding. Watch.
It's a genocide in Gaza for the last year. And every day you're up there denying accountability for it. So, I mean, what gives you the right to lecture other countries on their moral?
So if you have a policy question for me, I'm happy to take it. If you want to give a speech, places in Washington where you can give a speech.
Yeah, but people are sick of the bullshit in here. I mean, it is a genocide.
You are risking nuclear war in Ukraine for this proxy war. Go ahead.
Thank you. Okay. He hadn't actually got around to that yet. It hadn't occurred to him yet. Let's go a little bit further. November of 2024, he makes a joke how they want Israel to stop killing people, give aid to civilians, but it's not a hard and fast deadline like a midterm in school or a semester. Watch him joke about it and be scolded by the reporter for being so flippant.
They've failed to implement all of the things that we recommend in that letter. Now, that said, we are not at the end of the 30-day period,
okay,
and we
are in cover.
It's not the end of the semester.
You don't give out, you don't hand out grades in the middle.
Well,
in the
I
middle.
Suspect that the levity is a little bit inappropriate.
No, I, you're, well, I mean, you're,
I mean, it's, it, but look, you guys say they haven't done enough, so it's a fail at
we are
point.
Not, we are not at the end of where we are able to make an assessment. But I can tell you, the situation has not been good enough for some time, and the situation has not improved sufficiently in the 21, 22 days, whatever it is, since we sent that letter.
Okay.
There is still a week or so to go until we reach the end of the period, but there is much more that we need to see them do.
Thank you.
Okay, so what he's saying is like, yeah, there are kids starving and dying, but it's not the end of the semester. We haven't got there yet. So the kids that die in the interim before the semester is over, like that's all right, right? So but we need to just get to the deadline.
So is he basically saying that like we can't call it a genocide until the end? Like we shouldn't do anything. We shouldn't act as though it's a genocide because we don't know it's a genocide until the very end. So just wait until the end to find out it was a genocide. And then we'll go, oh, yep. Or I guess it was. My bad.
Yeah. Or when I don't have to stand at the podium anymore, then I can say it again. You know, what he cannot say is I didn't know at the time. It wasn't clear. It was put to him time and time again about this misery in Gaza, and he refused to acknowledge it until he could on a personal level. Again, Karine Jean-Pierre, Matthew Miller, they aren't confused. They were incentivized to not understand, to not admit, and definitely not to say it out loud. Their entire job depends on maintaining the narrative, not interrogating it. It is exactly as we were warned about in 1935 from Upton Sinclair, that it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon him not understanding it.
Right.
That's the only way we can explain this change of consciousness, is that now your salary demands for you to see reality. When it didn't, you didn't, and that's it. So let me know what you think. Are you, you know, again, we've admitted many times, you know, I felt like this, I was wrong, I researched it. This is why I thought that. This is, you can have a change of heart, but in 4 months and people died. So, okay, if you want to accept this contrition, go ahead, buy the book, but let me know why you do.
All right. Well, hey, we have a daily newsletter. We'd love for you all to subscribe. It's totally free. It's delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. And that way, over your cup of coffee, you can be updated and informed on some of the big stories of the day, stuff the mainstream media largely ignores. We try to do that. Google and Gmail have labeled our newsletter as dangerous. So if you do sign up by going to redacted.inc, you might get a notification from Gmail that says, are you sure you want to do this? Because that's a dangerous newsletter. And it might wind up in your spam folder or some other place. You need to click on that link, though, and just confirm that, yes, I do. Big middle finger to you, Google. Yes, I do want to receive the newsletter. And then you should, and just move it to your inbox. That way, tomorrow morning, on Thursday morning, you will receive the newsletter first thing in the morning. Also, I wanted to mention, although I don't have a picture of it at the moment, I wanted to put it up here. We just launched a brand new YouTube channel. And I just want to make sure I have the exact name correct, David. It is Redacted Clips Official. So where we will be able to pull some of our shorter form content, some of our clip down content as well. Not everyone can join us here live and watch the full show. So we are going to feature that. Again, it's a YouTube channel called Redacted Clips Official. So if you see that with a red logo right now, we might change all that up. But David, that is the name, correct? I just want to make sure
that is correct. Yep.
Okay, Redacted Clips Official. So, yeah, we're going to start being able to promote and push some of our smaller content up there, shorter form content on that channel. So please give it a subscribe if you're so inclined. I think we only have like 1,200 subscribers over there right now. So not the millions that we have here, but come on over there, subscribe, and you'll start to see more and more content. In fact, smaller form interviews as well going up there. So a lot of stuff that we're ramping up for the summer to bring you as much as we can. So thank you guys for being in the fight with us. Thank you for joining the rebellion. Thank you for seeking the truth with us. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everybody.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.